This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What a distance we've come. 50 years ago this month, a man was arrested for dressing in drag during a police raid on the Stonewall Inn, a bar in Greenwich Village in Manhattan. He and some other gay and lesbian customers resisted arrests, which led to a scuffle, which grew into a riot, which led to demonstrations that lasted for days. The event that we now just call Stonewall marked the beginning of the movement for LGBTQ rights. Today on the New Yorker Radio Hour, we're talking about Stonewall and the 50 years since, about the huge advances in rights for LGBTQ people, and also the backlash around the world. But I'm not going to do this on my own, not by any means. The great journalist and activist Masha Gessen, friend and colleague, is here with me. Masha, how are you doing?
Hi, David.
Now, how are you feeling about this anniversary moment? I don't always love anniversary journalism, but this 50th anniversary seems particularly meaningful and charged.
I have mixed feelings about this anniversary moment. It's a great celebration. The change that people are celebrating is truly extraordinary. The backlash is also extraordinary. Mm. And I probably wouldn't be me if I didn't feel ambivalent.
In some way.
But, you know, there's been a lot of discussion among LGBT scholars and writers and activists about the direction of the movement, especially in the last few years, sort of as things seem to have come such a long way, but also have gone in a different direction than a lot of people expected. So I wanted to talk to my favorite ambivalent historian of the gay and lesbian movement, Martin Duberman, who is somebody who has been around for all of it. He is in his late 80s now. And Martin, as it turned out during our conversation, used to go to the Stonewall Inn.
Because it was the only bar where gay men could dance. If you can believe that. Run by the mafia. Everyone who was a patron there knew that if the lights went on surrounding the small dance area, you instantly stopped what you were doing. Because the Sixth Precinct would come storming through, throwing people against the wall, asking for ID. There was a law in New York State, I believe, you had to be wearing three pieces of clothing appropriate to your gender. Can you imagine trying to define that today?
And all of this is happening in the context of great social foment, right?
Oh, absolutely. Black is beautiful more or less began the across-the-board rebellions that we saw throughout the decade. The feminist movement, Martin Luther King was assassinated. I mean, it was a time of enormous confrontation with authority.
Right. That really was a time of social change happening on so many levels.
It was. And I think we have to think of the gay and lesbian movement, certainly in that context, which I think is sometimes we forget. And also remember, within living memory, within your lifetime and mine, it was basically illegal to be gay. Martin told me about how the police used to entrap gay men on Fire Island, a popular gay holiday spot near here.
In the old days when we went out there, and this goes back to the late 50s, early 60s, we used to be very careful because the cruising areas were the boardwalks. And what the police would do across the way in Sayville, Long Island, was they would send over their young, hot plainclothesmen, and they would do the approaching on the boardwalk to a gay guy who was out cruising. And given how gorgeous the plainclothesman was, the gay guy would respond. And the next thing he knew, he'd be handcuffed and he'd be taken down to the dock. And they would literally handcuff people to the flagpole, go back on the boardwalk, do the same routine five or six more times, go back over to Sayville, and they would have a kangaroo court. Not only were you arrested, but your name was printed in your local newspaper. And very often in those years, you lost your apartment almost automatically. You lost your job. The very most basic civil rights were not available.
Stonewall was the beginning of what we think of as the gay and lesbian movement, a mythologized beginning, obviously not actually an accurate beginning. But that movement is still going on. Some of those rights we still don't have.
And what were the initial aims of the movement?
Decriminalizing gay sex, stopping the harassment by police, also getting homosexuality off the list of psychiatric disorders, and ending discrimination against queer people in housing, employment, etc.
Now, broadly speaking, how much of that progress has come from elected officials finally doing the right thing, and how much of it came through fights in the court?
That's a great question. So the marriage fight, which is something that actually began in this millennium, has largely proceeded through the courts. Discrimination protections are mostly legislative, and we've actually made a lot less progress on anti-discrimination protections than on marriage.
For example?
For example, in half the states in this country, it is still legal to fire somebody for being gay. It is legal to deny people public accommodations. So you get cases like the famous Colorado wedding cake case where you can get married in Colorado, but you can also be denied a wedding cake.
Now, let's talk about the impact of the AIDS crisis. I remember when ACT UP closed the FDA for a day demanding earlier access to drugs. How much did the AIDS crisis actually affect the movement?
I would say the AIDS crisis transformed the movement and the community. It's very hard to describe to people who are either not queer or younger than I am what it's like to have lived through a period when, you know, everyone I knew died. All the men I knew died. But it also transformed the movement by making LGBT people perversely much more visible. It also brought gay and lesbian movements together. I also think it had a profound impact on the healthcare system in this country. I mean, it's a huge social phenomenon, both the AIDS crisis and the AIDS activist movement, that I think we still haven't quite processed.
Masha, my sense that while gay marriage, certainly in the queer community, had vast support, it was not a matter of unanimity. There was some second thoughts, even to the very end, about whether marriage should be at least as prominent a goal as it was and is.
You know, many of us joined a sexual liberation movement.
Yeah.
We actually envision changing the way that the society thinks about family and kinship and love. The marriage fight is, in a way, the opposite of that.
It is conservative in some sense.
It is deeply conservative in a sense. It is sort of buying the entire marriage paradigm and then asking to be included in it. And that's one of the reasons I actually wanted to talk to Martin Duberman, because of his book, Has the Gay Movement Failed?, in which he's pretty critical of what he sees as the movement's drift toward the political center.
The whole thrust of the gay movement in the last 20 years at least has been not only gay marriage, but allowing gays to serve openly in the military, being allowed to kill, and being allowed to settle down into, you know, a monogamous suburban life, which really doesn't suit our needs or our values or our heritage. I mean, this is not who we are, or at least who we have been. no, we don't want that. If we're going to form, you know, relationships of long duration, let's tailor them to what we've learned over many years of being outsiders. We've learned a lot about monogamy, gender fluidity.
So Martin Duberman wants things to be a lot more radical. What does radical mean in this sense?
Radical means actually, I would say, more intersectional, more concerned with other questions of equality. So economic justice, racism, ableism, sexism.
Is it succeeding? Is it, or is that kind of, or is he a fringe voice in the overall community?
He's not a fringe voice, but there is a kind of vice situation, and this has been the case throughout the gay and lesbian movement, which is that the left has not particularly welcomed the queers.
How does that show itself? Because you saw in Black Lives Matter, you did see a lot of intersectional rhetoric, at least from the leadership of Black Lives Matter.
Absolutely. But that's a fairly recent development, and it has a lot to do with the Black Lives Matter movement being founded basically by mm-hmm. a bunch of queer people of color. That's the sort of thing that Duberman is talking about and I think dreams of.
So we're also at a time where we're seeing a mounting legal challenge to some of the movement's gains. There's a case before the Supreme Court where the court will decide if laws against gender discrimination include or not sexual orientation or gender identity.
Well, we've seen a lot, actually. We've seen the Trump administration lift most of the protections that could be lifted by executive action. And this has especially affected transgender people.
In the military, for example.
The transgender ban in the military affects the greatest number of people. The military is the largest employer of transgender people in this country. Right? The case that is in the Supreme Court now, a lot of LGBT lawyers are sort of waiting with dread to see what happens because there's very little reason to think it could work out well. There's several employment discrimination cases that are sewn up together in this one case that's coming before the court. The well-founded fear is that it will essentially legalize or sanctify anti-gay discrimination for the foreseeable future.
Right now you have Pete Buttigieg running for the presidency and certainly makes no secret of his personal life, his sexual life. Does that have any effect on anything?
There was a great article, now I'm trying to remember where, about Pete Buttigieg being the heterosexual candidate without the wife. I mean, there's a kind of perfect American narrative, you know, the veteran, the happily married, the
religious.
For queers like me, it's a little cringeworthy. I think that for a lot of people, it's deeply meaningful, and I don't want to discount it. I think for a lot of young people in this country, to see somebody like Buttigieg, unapologetic, articulate, beautiful, with his wonderful husband, being taken seriously, being so visible, it has to be hugely meaningful for a lot of people.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.